And it goes a little something like this.
Well. My studio's in limbo. Oh, I know what I gotta do. Hang on a second. Oh, no. Okay. I was too busy listening to my guest's music. I am totally enthralled by her talent. Tonight we have Jessica Ridley. The last name may be familiar, and that's probably because her husband's name is Kent Ridley. And Kent and Jessica were up in Alberta a few years ago and decided to move to Nashville to help begin or at least extend a career in country music. Now, she refers to what she does as bluegrass, but I don't know. To me, it transcends bluegrass. And if you've had the opportunity to hear Jessica Ridley, I think you'll be impressed. We're going to get a chance to talk to her and listen to how she got to where she is now and how what kind of road it is that you have to take. Not literally to Nashville, but figuratively as well. And I'm dying to talk to her. I haven't talked to her yet. I think she answered the phone once when I was talking to Kent, but that's about it. So Aaron will be joining us. I'll be calling Aaron. And just to get things in the, you know, just so you know, I'm not, you know, blowing smoke. Here's a song that's pretty good. I think you'll enjoy it. And let's just say that it'll be, well, you know what? Yeah, I don't know. We'll play this one because this is one of the ones I like.
Version of a late, late show. Catch a look in my Hello?
It's Frank.
Frank. Oh, hey, Frank. How's it going, Frank?
Not bad, not bad. That's The Highway by Jessica Ridley. On the phone with us right now is, I don't know, is your title manager as well as husband and father and all that other wonderful stuff?
No, I am. I'm as far away from manager as I can get.
So is Jessica around?
She's actually on stage right now.
Ooh.
She's playing downtown at Rippy's right now, and she's not getting off stage for another about 30 minutes. We were hoping that she'd be done already. She could get on the air with you.
Don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. It's more important. Her career is far more important than this program. But what we can do, Kent, we can kill some time. Unless you need to get off the phone and you want me to call you back, that's up to you.
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Okay,
I can join you.
All right. So Aaron's here with us, too. Aaron, let me turn your mic on. There you go.
Hey guys,
you're in, Aaron.
Going?
Aaron William Freeland, he's my techie. Whenever I want to know anything about a subject that I'm talking about, I just click Aaron, and all the info just spews out of his phone and into the show.
Perfect.
And his cat always has a couple of things to say as well.
Yeah, Aries is being a little talkative tonight. Apparently he thinks there's not enough food in his bowl.
Don't they always think that? Don't they always think that?
Yeah.
Well, I've been looking forward to this interview, Aaron, for and as I told you, Aaron had to go away for a couple of weeks, so I said, "No, we're not going to do the Ridley thing until Aaron comes back, cuz Aaron loves music." And I don't know, Aaron, if you're a big country and western fan. By definition, Jessica Ridley refers to her type of music as bluegrass. But in my opinion, I think she transcends more than bluegrass. I've had a chance to listen to her music. And you know what, Kent? I'm very impressed. I truly am.
That's good to hear. I love hearing those kind of comments.
Well, I really am impressed. And, you know, she... when she comes in, we'll talk about it. But just as sort of a preview for those folks that are tuning in right now, she's really, I have to say, a very interesting singer. She has an energy that I find really catchy, and I really like her riffs, if you will.
Yeah, it's really developed here this last little bit, and I know I heard you playing The Highway there right at the end, and it really showcases kind of where she's at now compared to some of her earlier stuff.
I like her ballads too, but we'll talk to her about that. Kent, why don't we switch gears and for a few minutes until she gets off stage, we can talk about football, and I'm dying to talk about the game last night, which, by the way, I didn't see. But from what I could tell, and I heard a little bit of it on the radio, it really was Montreal showing a weakness with, the greasy turkey.
It was a weakness with a lot of things, I think. It was pretty pretty lopsided there that first half. I don't know if I've seen Montreal play that bad in a half in a long time.
Yeah, it was less about how well the Argos played, more about how poorly Montreal played. It sounded and looked like they had a chance there in the third quarter, or should I say in the middle of the fourth quarter with about 8 minutes left. An interesting decision by the coach.
Yeah, they could have put something together there. Instead of taking the first field goal, went for it on third down, got it, and then kind of, I don't know if they went to the well too many times and tried the same plays too many times, but they just got eaten up there to turn it over on downs. And it kind of looked like every time they flipped to Calvillo that he was having trouble hearing the signal call in or something. He seemed to be just not connected as he normally is, that's for sure.
That's been the kind of year Calvillo has had. He has looked out of his element, which is un-Calvillo-like, many times in the season. You know, looking desperately at the sideline, almost looking for the answer that he can't seem to find.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very strange. You know, how other teams operate, you know, everybody does it different, but with that radio that goes into the quarterback's helmet, it gets cut off at the 10-second mark, and it's like they're—I don't know if they're giving them too much or, you know, and the end of it's getting cut off because when the radio goes dead, then you're back to the hand signals or what it is. But he's he really does seem to be missing out on things.
Now, Kent, would you say that's an indication of him missing the play call? Of the coaches on the sidelines taking too long to send in plays, or a combination of the two? Because you're right.
Yeah.
Sometimes he seems almost bewildered out there on the field.
Yeah, it's very strange. I know, like, BC, they still can signal in the play call, and while they've got that 10 seconds of open communication to Lule, they're relaying in what the defense is setting up in, rather than trying to make a play call through the headset. And so I kind of wonder, you know, maybe Montreal's trying to send everything through the headset. And 10 seconds, you know, some people can get a lot of words out in 10 seconds, but I don't know if you could get out a defensive formation plus a play call in 10 seconds.
So basically it sounds like maybe the same problem the coach was having that cost him his job. Too much too soon.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, Jim Pop's an old hand at this, and you know, I'm guessing he probably went back and pulled out their playbook from last year. Now, of course, you'd have some guys that are new to the team, and that stuff would all be brand new for them. So you're gonna have to kind of get them up to speed and get your play calling back to its level. You know, it's a strange situation in Montreal, and I think with some time here as a buffer, they might have a chance here in going into next week to kind of have some things ironed out. But you know, it's strange, and when you get Noel Devine putting the ball on the turf a couple times, I guess three times in the end of things, that's not going to make for a very easy night to overcome those kind of mistakes.
No, when you're it is very difficult momentum-wise, you know, aside from maybe the not going for it maybe when they should have, you know, momentum killers are always, you know, turnovers. And it was Tim Hortons out there.
Yeah. Yeah,
Bakery
was
working full tilt.
It was not pretty. It could have been worse too. You know, if it wasn't for that that illegal block call, Chad Owens would have had that punt return touchdown on top of everything. So, you know, it was bad, but it could have been worse. And fans were leaving Montreal in the second quarter already. So that's a pretty rough night.
Oh my! Yeah, I didn't have the good fortune as an Argo fan to watch the game, but it's one of those games where I'm kind of glad I didn't watch, because I really do feel sorry for Montreal in this real turnaround. You know, I mean, it all ended for them last year on a either a tip or a ball that a receiver couldn't see in the end zone in time. And they were eliminated in the playoffs after a great year. And they came that close to going to the Grey Cup. And then to see this, you know, I know they've lost their coach. But I guess people who say that coaches don't make that big a difference in sports, I think Montreal is showing quite factually that coaches can be missed.
Oh, yeah. And in the CFL, it kind of compounds itself because while you're only allowed so many hours of the day with your players, your coach can work through the night. And so if you've got a coach that's dedicated to what's going on and determined to make the adjustments to move you forward, you know, that's one thing. Then when you throw in the chaos of removing a coach, add in the uncertainty of, you know, it was his staff, so how many of those other coaches are going to stay? You got to quickly go through all those kind of meetings and go, you know, determine if you want to keep the staff, if you want to switch the staff, and then you have to game plan for, you know, defending Grey Cup champions and division leaders, you know, a very important game. It sure does add up to a whole lot of chaos and not a lot of chance of success right away.
Yeah, no, it was a bit of a disaster. On the Toronto side of things, if Kolaros makes a pass and doesn't miss by 2-3 feet, Owens goes in for a touchdown. This would have been another touchdown that could have made the margin even mm-hmm. wider. You know, it was that kind of game where you'd almost say that Montreal was lucky that it wasn't any worse. I mean, they really didn't deserve to be in the game, and they actually were with 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. But that quickly evaporated.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, and with Kolaros, you know, to his credit, coming in cold off the bench that way, in a game he wasn't expecting to play in. You know, he started off well and then kind of got shaky there for a little bit. But I think overall, you know, it was a good performance from from your backup. And it kind of gives you a little more of that, that comfort blanket of, you know, if Ricky Ray does get nicked up, we can trust in this guy that we've got on the bench. You know, he's somebody we've seen now a couple times, and he'll only get better. And so that's a big bonus for Toronto. You know, it's when you can take one of those early leads and then treat the rest of the game like a preseason game without throwing it away or letting your guard down too much, that's always a good night.
Always. Always a good night. What does Montreal do? I'm really confused as to what they can do now other than show a lot of patience. They've lost Jamal Richardson. They're not healthy. And they're not healthy physically, and it appears they're not healthy mentally either. What do they do next?
That's a good question. If it was my team, if I was the GM stepping down onto that bench, I think the first thing you got to do is strip it back down to basics, and almost go back to a training camp version of installing the offense again, and make sure that everybody is on the same page there, especially on the offense. I don't think their defense is in as bad a shape.
They played well last night.
But with that offense, I'd be, going through even down to what your audible calls are and making sure that everybody knows what's happening every time they step on the field. Like one of the things Matt Dunnigan was saying there is, here they had a play and nobody on the bench was moving. And, you know, nobody on the bench knew if it was going to be a field goal attempt or if they were going to go for it on third. And it just seemed like the bench was disengaged. And it was like, okay, you 12 guys are out there and you're doing your thing. And call us when you're ready, you know. And you can't really operate that way. You need your bench to be fully engaged with what's going on and knowing, anticipating. Taking those seconds to run around on the bench and try to gather up your short yardage crew you know, sometimes you just don't have that. So that's a real telling sign. And I think Dunnigan, you know, for all his excitement that he brings to the broadcast booth, you know, I think he was dead on that situation, saying that they're disconnected from each other. And so that would be a major move that I would make, is making sure that everybody's back, same page. You know, I don't know if you just rent a hotel and you throw everybody in the hotel for a night or something, but, you know, put them all together and make them all kind of relearn things together.
It almost, you know, there's an analogy that I can throw out there. When a team starts to fall apart the way they have been falling apart week after week, it gets to the point where like you're saying about the players not knowing to go on. In hockey, there was this thing called the Philly flu. And whenever Philadelphia played hockey in another team's city or at home, wherever, a lot of players would go to the bench, but nobody would want to come on to the ice. Because it led to disaster getting on the ice, and they referred to it as the Philly flu. And it almost seems as though Montreal's suffering from that, the Philly flu, where they almost aren't ready to go out there because they don't feel prepared. And subconsciously, they don't want to be out there because, you know, nobody likes to be in a bad situation. And this is the part where, you know, a team in Montreal's position right now seems to be headed in that direction where failure is now automatic, and the confidence is just well below where it should be. So I guess maybe the hotel room idea to try and, like you say, connect, reconnect, as Dunnigan said. But also, I don't know whether – I know that sometimes what's done is teams, coaches, motivators that, you know, the psychologists on teams will play tape of the team when it was playing well, just to help them get confident. It might be something as simple as that, but, you know, when you're lacking confidence, it's a tough thing to, you know, retain once you've lost, you know, to regain, I should say. It's very hard. Confidence is a very, 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 you know, fragile thing. It truly is.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great thought there. You know, and with Montreal, you've got a core group of that team that's a carryover from those successful franchises. You know, it's not like it was so far in the past that nobody has
back.
Any connection to it. Yeah, you know, like if you were trying to do the same thing with the New York Islanders, you know, most of the roster wouldn't have even been born the last time they won the Stanley Cup. So you got some problems there too. But with Montreal, you've got quite a few players that are layovers from their last Grey Cup win. And you've got these guys, they remember how that happened. You know, you got leaders on offense and defense that would be really easy to relate to for the new guys.
Well, we'll see if they work things out. Any other ideas about how the season's going for we've seen now tonight? I don't have the score of the game tonight that's being played, but
we're just catching up to halftime here, final half minute of the first half, and it's 23-7 for Calgary right now.
Somebody seemed to think that Calgary would have the number tonight. I forget who that was.
You know, Wednesday was a long time ago.
Apparently not for Calgary. It was just yesterday for them. I love the CFL season this year. And, you know, it was kind of funny because, you know, just because a team comes out of the gate 5-0, it doesn't guarantee anything. I'm sorry. That's just the way it is. I mean, you know, as easily as you can be invincible, you can be beatable as well.
Oh, exactly. You know, here's an interesting number for you. Let's take the Toronto Argonaut franchise. Their storied history, their 16 Grey Cups, they've never started a season 5-0. Ever.
And they've done pretty well historically.
So, you know, it's all in how you finish. You know, one of the sayings I like to use is you need to win the unimportant games so that you have a chance to win the important ones. But that doesn't mean I'm putting a lot of stock into the unimportant games early. Saskatchewan coming out 5-0, what does that really mean? It means they got a good shot at the crossover to the East, you know, at the very least. But it doesn't mean that they're, you know, having to go out and scalp to buy tickets for their friends and families to come to the Grey Cup this year. There's still a lot of football to go.
A heck of a lot of football. And even and let's be clear about this. There's enough football out there for Montreal to recover and do what you just said, and that is have a great finish to the season.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Even Montreal, you know, even Winnipeg with their house cleaning that they ran through the ringer here, they've got time to turn that around. You know, it's the more you lose at the beginning, the more unlikely it is, but it sure doesn't count you out.
No, not in the CFL. So this, you know, again, this is probably getting boring me mentioning this. The Argos were only 9-9. So, you know, and they won the Grey Cup. And they're not the only team to have ever won the Grey Cup with an inglorious season record. You know, it's not a prerequisite to winning the Grey Cup.
No, well, you know, you got two big examples in Alberta. You've got the 8-10 Calgary team that won a Grey Cup, and then you've got the 16-2 Edmonton team that didn't make it to the big game. So,
yep.
You know, once you hit that one and done playoff format, it's never a sure thing, no matter how your season went you know, anything that happens, as soon as you hit November, everything's clean slate and away you go.
Yeah, but the idea is, I'm sorry.
If I could just jump on here, just a quick update on the score. At the half, it's 26-7 now. So Calgary just dropped in another 3 points.
Yeah, you know, and the game's not over yet. Let's be clear on that as well. You know, there's still a full half to be played. And Saskatchewan does have a lot of weapons in the arsenal, in their offensive arsenal. So, yeah, they could make a game of it yet. But, you know, really, during the season, what you want to do is you want to get down who you are, your character, you know, what does your team do? And how well can it play in offense, defense, specialty teams? They're all works in progress. So, you know, a couple of brilliant moves and some good luck, and any team can be anywhere real quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, just takes a couple bounces, a couple of those Argo bounces, and away you go.
Yeah, and they've got the bounces to, you know, the Argos have had an interesting, you know, history. Right now, they're in a situation where their team is playing really well. The fans aren't reacting, I don't think, as positively as they should be. You know, but I'm not going to sit here and criticize anybody for not going to Argo games. But I will invite them to go to Argo games and be a part of the excitement that we like to generate. But, you know, it is what it is. And as long as the football's good, I'm glad I'm going. I wish the stadium was full. It would make for a better experience. But what really matters is if the team plays well, you're fortunate as a fan to go to the stadium to watch your team if they've always got a chance to win. And that's the frustration with Montreal that they're feeling right now and the fans are feeling, is that they don't think many of them didn't think their team had a chance in the second quarter to win the game.
Yeah.
You know, and that's got to be that's a much larger concern. That is the largest concern that Montreal needs to erase. You know, not only do they not have confidence in themselves, their fans don't either. And that's the scary part. Because I always maintain it's much easier to build passion for a team than it is to start from scratch. When your team,
yeah.
Like, once you slide downhill, it's a lot of hard work to get that passion from the fans, you can lose it real easy. And right now, it's not looking very good for Montreal. And that's my biggest concern as a CFL fan, that Montreal hits the skids too deeply and ends up being the Montreal that was the Montreal before Pop went to Montreal to rebuild that franchise into a real, you know, boots to the wall team, a team that had a shot at the Grey Cup every year. And we do know that Montreal had some problems before they started winning again. So we hope, we CFL fans hope that Montreal doesn't digress into that same situation. That would be sad.
And it was, you know, like you're pulling back into their history a little bit. It wasn't a long-term drop-off that caused them the grief back, you know, in the late 70s, early 80s. You know, like, they won that Grey Cup before Edmonton started the dynasty run, and 10 years later the franchise closed the doors and everybody walked away. It's not like an Ottawa situation where it was, a long run of bad teams, or Winnipeg being, you know, I guess, what are they at right now? Since 1990, that's since they've won a Grey Cup. Montreal had that quick turnover. A couple of bad owners got in the way, and things went downhill in a big hurry. And so I don't think this ownership group is in that same mold. And I do believe in the abilities of Jim Popp to restock that franchise as quick as he can. But hopefully they get that ship righted and at least get things sorted out there pretty quick.
Yeah, and if you want to talk about teams that have had long-term failure, even with the 16 Grey Cups, the Argos, it's either been feast or famine for the Argos.
Yeah, they've had a couple of those years in there too, haven't they?
Yeah, and there's been some concern for that team, and it doesn't manifest itself in the same way that it does with some other franchises. Less about the team disappearing, more about a difficulty in selling the team or buying the team, whichever scenario you're behind. You know, that's been the biggest problem the Argos have had is ownership. And in fact, even now, after winning the Grey Cup, I don't think there'd be any question that if there was a buyer out there, I believe, and I think a lot of people agree that the team would be sold if there was a buyer out there. The only reason, they're still under the umbrella of Mr. I Love Football is because there's nobody out there to buy the team.
Yeah.
You know? So,
yeah,
you know,
he stepped in that doorway and saved that franchise. I believe, like you do, that, yeah, if there were more owners, then this situation could be rectified. And it's kind of one of my pet peeves is that we've got a situation there in Toronto, you know, or Toronto, Vancouver, where you got the same family owning both teams. And then you've got situations like Winnipeg where potential buyer came in and then went out the back door. And I don't understand it. There seems to always be a group that's willing to save, you know, the Oilers or the Flames or, you know, all these hockey teams for, you know, gobs of money. They can buy the whole league for the amount of money that they're putting into one NHL team. And yet we can't find owners for a 10th franchise in Canada. We can't find owners to take over, you know, one of the eight we've got going. It's that's a frustrating element for me about that league. And I don't know if they're just searching in the wrong spots, because it seems like we should be at a level, especially with the new TV deal coming in, we should be at a level where the potential to make significant dollars on a franchise are finally, you know, on the horizon. And you'd think there'd be more business guys looking at it from that point of view and going, okay, I could take, you know, a couple of years of losses to get things rectified, and I'd be willing to take a chance you know, if you could hit that level of merchandise sales, you know, even if you hit the half of the level that the riders are at, that would still be a good chunk of change each year, and you'd win back your initial investment pretty quick. But it's you know, I don't know where those people hang out. If I did, I'd go visit them a whole lot more. So,
well, you know, in my opinion, the problem is there isn't a good business plan in place with the Toronto Argos until they have a stadium that is, if not theirs, you know, as far as owning it's concerned, theirs at least to schedule games at a, you know, at their bidding rather than what's left. And that makes for a not very good business plan. And you know, anybody who wants to buy the team, I think a stadium is the real problem with the Argos, unlike the rest of the teams. I think that's the albatross around their neck. It's all about scheduling and committing and having, you know, parking and concessions and those fees as well that do add to the profit margin.
Yeah, you got to end up in a location where you're not given 12 days and told, okay, you can pick 10 of these. You know, that just doesn't work. You know, it doesn't work for a league of this stature. It doesn't work for a franchise of that stature. You know, that's what you do to a peewee hockey team. You know, that's not what should be happening with a professional league like that. So I totally understand that. That would be a major drawback for me if I was, you know, in the position where spending $20 million on a football franchise was an option, and looking at a franchise that had a stadium would be a whole lot better deal than trying to get in on something that you may have to scramble and you end up playing a preseason game in a 5,000 seat, 6,000 seat CIS stadium. You know, some issues like that would definitely be red flags.
Yes, a lot of red flags. A lot of red flags. Okay, on to, I slipped into that vein of thought because of Montreal and because of how poorly they played, and it reminded me of a bad time as a CFL fan because it really bothered me when Montreal left the league and then came back. You know, I felt so terrible because I really do believe that cities like Montreal, Toronto, and BC should be cornerstones of the league, not questionable, you know, not questionable franchises. But let's talk about the positive sense in football right now. This has become the year of, I think we've seen more veteran quarterbacks lose their shine. We've got in Hamilton, their big guy there has lost a lot of his luster. We talked about Calvillo, you know, you have in Calgary, you have a great quarterback supposedly that spends a lot of time getting hurt. As you remember, on Wednesday, Travis Lule was put through the grinder by Mike, one of my favorite callers. And, you know, it seems to me this is a tough year for veteran quarterbacks in the CFL. You know, there isn't, outside of Ricky Ray, there aren't many, you know, first-string quarterbacks that were written in during the off season that are having good seasons.
Yeah, and even with Ricky, you've got a knee issue there that's kind of holding him back a little bit, maybe not as noticeable as some of the others. And then you've got Darian Durant, who's having a good year, especially when they're able to spread it out with the run and kind of even things out a little bit more and take some of that stress off of him. But yeah, it is an interesting run here we've got on quarterbacks. And it's one of my favorite things, you know, during the off season, there was a lot of lamenting and wishing for better backups to be in the CFL and things like that. And I think the backups have kind of answered that bell. And
they sure have.
You know, they've done a good job in what they've been forced to do, and a lot of starts by some guys without a lot of experience and guys coming out with wins. You know, Kolaris came out with one. Drew Lilly came out with a win. Bo Levi Mitchell with a win. That's a very very big positive, I think, in this league.
Absolutely. And you know, it's yin and yang, right? If the quarterbacks don't go down or lose confidence or their coaches lose confidence in them, we don't know how well the backups are doing. And so that's the upside on, you know, it's great to know. It really is great to know that in the CFL, there is depth at the quarterback position because it is such a key position that makes the game entertaining. You know, two and out is not entertaining football.
Yeah, yeah, by any means. And it kind of turned into, I guess, what the Canadian NFL snobs, I call them, kind of turned into their worst nightmare. When you start playing, you know, football tennis there with the punters out there as much as the rest of the guys. And, you do have to kind of adjust your game a little bit when you only have the two downs to kind of play with and one down to get the work done if you're going to go that way. And you can't just settle for, you know, 3-4 yard gains. You have to be going for 6 or 7 yards every time.
Well, it's been an interesting season thus far. And I think one more bit of good news, you know, because in every black cloud, there's always a silver lining. And for teams like Winnipeg, Montreal, even Hamilton and Edmonton, things can turn around on a dime in the CFL. A couple of breaks here or there, and your team can really improve their season. So I don't have any concerns about those teams not having a chance to do better. I think they will do better, and I know they can. And it'll become a real interesting season with, you know, in the East with really finishing second is going to be that by default. It isn't going to be, you know, by how many wins. It's just how many times you don't lose. You know, you don't give away a game, and you'll be in the playoffs. And that's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, teams play well, and the difference between a team that plays really well and a team that doesn't, it really isn't that much. You know, we forget in professional sports, you know, the margin of ability and or talent is exposed so easily by the very talented players that are in the league. You know, you can't give anybody a break because they'll kill you. There's just too much talent out there. And right now, the problem with those teams that we've discussed are they're killing them. They're shooting themselves in the foot, you know. And that can be turned around. All they have to do is point the gun in a different direction.
Yeah, yeah. They didn't make it into the league because they were bad players.
Exactly.
You know, by any means. And I think in Canada, the Canadians are guilty of it in football because we see the big contracts in the NFL, so our guys must be, you know, not as good, right? You know, Peyton Manning could buy the league with his contract, so the CFL can't be as good as anything like that. And we also see it with our hockey fans. You see these hockey fans that just rip, you know, on that number five defenseman. Well, if you ever saw that number five defenseman at your local rink, he would outshine even the best rec league player on a consistent basis. And, you know, it's amazing how we see it, and we tend to judge against only the very best, which isn't it's not necessarily a bad thing. You always need to compare yourself against somebody better, but sometimes when the fans start digging in, they're digging in for the wrong reasons and going after guys and saying, you know, oh, he's a terrible player and, oh, you know, he's this and he's that and you know, he can't skate. And I always laugh now, you know, when you read the descriptions of Gretzky now, they talk about, you know, how he didn't have the best foot speed. But when you go back through the film, when did he ever lose a breakaway?
You know,
he didn't have the best shot. But go back to the film and look at some of those shots, you know, like the one on Vernon. You know, so you can pick apart even Gretzky. So So I don't mind when people try to pick apart, you know, the cornerback for the Bombers. These guys are in the league because they have talent. Situations arise every single time, and unless you're really staring down at each and every play, sometimes you miss things as a fan. And with 24 guys in motion during the middle of a play, it's pretty easy to not catch up the reason why, you know, why X, Y, and Z happened. You know, it was a guy slipped a little bit. He took the wrong angle a little bit. He was distracted because he was trying to decide between covering two guys on defense. The guy on offense, he missed the hole a little bit because he was trying to hedge his bets between A and B, or, you know, whatever he was trying to do. It's really easy to criticize, I guess, is
the
long and
is.
The short of it.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And even if you look in auto racing, if you look at how far behind a guy is, oh, geez, he's a good 30 feet behind the other guy, and it's 0.003 seconds of difference. You know what I mean? So, and that's the way sports, you know, that's sports. And that's the beauty of sport. And that's why, you know, competitiveness is always the aim for every team and every league. And the competitiveness, you know, the worst enemy of competitiveness is, you know, when you have a team that's playing their game, their minds are on the game, you know, their heads are in the game. And they appear to have more talent than the other team. Like last night, you know, there's players out there. Two in particular, Kolaros and Jeepers Creepers. Now his name just jumped out of my head. The running back. Oh my! For
which
the
one? Steel?
For the Steel. Yeah.
Steel?
Thank you. Oh man, his name just jumped out of my head. you know, those guys weren't, you know, the best guys the Argos could put out there. If they could, they would put Ray out there. If they could, they would put Cackard out there. But still, they look good out there because the team's head is in the game. And that's really what sports is all about. It's a team game, and when you watch the games being played, they're truly very interesting to watch. And, you know, basically because of the talent that's out there. And you're right, it's very easy to criticize. I, on the other hand, I just like to observe, and my comments are more or less directed to individuals in a sense that, like, well, Burris and it appears Calvillo are suffering from the same problem. Is I don't know whether the coaches that they had there, the first one in Montreal's case, and now the second being Pop, and, of course, Austin in Hamilton, they might be speaking a language that neither of these quarterbacks understand. I don't get it. I really don't get it. I mean, they really look confused out there. And how does that happen in a matter of a year? Well, it isn't because of the talent just disappeared. You know,
yeah.
There's a lot more to it than just talent. So, yeah, you got to have your head in the game. You got to know what you're doing. And unfortunately, last night, Montreal did not look good. I'm glad I didn't see the game because I would have been too embarrassed for Montreal fans to watch that game. I'll wait until the next game. The next game should be interesting against Edmonton.
Yeah. I expect Montreal to kind of come back and fire up a little bit more. I expect Calvillo to finally look comfortable. Maybe after, you know, another week of practice and getting back used to, you know, whatever the change is, you know, coming through his headset. And I'm not really sure, I don't know if I ever heard the final result, if it was going to be a switch to Doug Berry calling the plays over Miller calling the plays to him. So maybe it was something as simple as that, you know, just the cadence coming through the speaker was different, and all of a sudden it's a little bit tougher to pick up. And so maybe another week, another week in the same room together will change that around for them.
Well, I hope so for their sake. Should I give Jessica a call soon?
Yeah. Did you get the note that I sent you?
Yep. I've got it. I just wanted to make sure it'd be okay to call
Perfect.
Her first. So we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll take a short break. And when we come back, we'll give Jessica Ridley a call and discuss her career. And I guess, what is it, 8 years ago you guys went to Nashville?
No, we've only been down here for two.
Oh, only for two? Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so she's made a lot of progress in a very short time then.
Yeah, we've been going for close to 7 years here now at the business, but we've only been down here for two.
Oh, okay, that's my confusion. Okay, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back with Jessica Ridley, former Albertan, and also same province as the volleyball champs for this year. Alberta just won the volleyball championship, beating BC. First time Alberta's won, so another Alberta success story. We'll be back right after this.
Perfect.
I'm Quincy Hart, and I started I Believe in Me because I saw there was a need for us to believe in ourselves more than life teaches us to believe in ourselves. People believe in negative statistics, therefore they become statistics. Elementary school students and middle school students are failing and not passing their tests. High school students are dropping out at an alarming rate. The unemployment rate is at an all-time high. With self-belief, self-confidence, and an overall positive self-image, we can fix a lot of these problems that we're facing. With the positive self-image, that elementary school student and that middle school student will succeed in class and be promoted to high school. That high school student will complete high school and graduate from college. That individual that's unemployed will find a job or create work for themselves. I believe in me, therefore I have the confidence to believe in you. I believe that you will help me fulfill my desires according to the younger generation. They label Generation X. Teach them the self-confidence they need to become Generation Excellent. I believe in me. I believe in you. Join me on this mission.
You're listening to Candid Frank Live, streaming on Rouge Radio. We're the Argos Cheerleaders.
You're gonna be the victim of a hit and run.
Hey, Aaron, you might gotta like the sound of that phone ringing, huh?
Oh, that's awesome.
It's got a real rhythm. It's got a real rhythm to it. Jessica, how you doing? It's Frank here.
I'm good.
Frank and Aaron. Frank. Candid Frank Live.
Sorry, I'm gonna plug here. Just got done singing. It's real loud. It's been a long time.
Yeah, no, no, I know. If you want, I can call back in a couple of minutes. Give you a chance to, I guess, cool down.
Yeah, give me 20 minutes. That'd be perfect.
You got it. I'll call you in 20 minutes.
Thank you. Okay.
You're welcome.
Bye.
Okay. We'll give her a chance. I don't wanna force feed talking to her if she's. I can imagine what it's like just coming off stage, and you know, it's Friday night, fun night if you will, and we have a different way of enjoying ourselves on Friday nights here on Candid Frank Live. Aaron comes in and we start talking about stuff. Hey, Aaron, have you been watching The Bridge?
Have I been watching The Bridge?
Yeah.
I don't think I get that channel.
FX.
I'll be honest with you.
FX.
No, I don't get FX.
Oh, too bad. You'd love that show.
Yeah? Dang.
Yep. Yeah, you would love that show. It's a great show. You'd really like it. It's a new one. Then,
now,
of course,
is that about the American-Mexican border or about the Canadian-American?
That's correct. No, you were right the first time.
Oh, okay. So it takes place in Texas, then, I'm assuming.
No, Albuquerque.
Oh, New Mexico. All right, that'll work.
Yeah, New Mexico and Mexico. But, yeah, it's really a great show. I know we like talking about entertainment, so we've got a country singer coming on in about 20 minutes. So remind me when the 20 – okay, so with
I got
40
it.
Minutes
Don't worry. I'll remind
show,
you, Frank.
Okay, good man. you know, live on-air producer. There's also another show that my wife and I are watching. It's called Under the Dome.
Oh, based on the Stephen King novel.
That's right.
Yeah, I'd heard about that. I haven't had a chance to catch that one either.
if I were in town
a little bit more.
That one isn't bad either. That one isn't bad either. Yeah. It's another good show. I guess the show that we talked about that we both like is on hiatus now, and it appears all the TV shows are coming back. So for those of you that are waiting for the new seasons to start, they're starting early. They're starting in August, early August.
Yeah, they're trying to get a little bit of a jump on everybody, I think, and trying to nail down a few more of those dollars. But here's the other thing. By starting them off in August instead of when they traditionally start in late September to mid-October, they have a chance to prep not one but two replacement series if those shows decide they want to. So
yeah. And they also,
if we're talking about the same show here, Frank, we don't actually call it a hiatus. We call it a He Ate Us, if we're referring to Hannibal.
Yeah, he ate us, yeah.
It's a he ate us instead of a hiatus.
he ate us. Yes. Good one, Aaron. I like that one. I'll have to use it later once you've forgotten that you
Lorenzo
invented.
Lorenzo actually had a birthday recently, so it's his production company that's helping put it together. It's Dino De Laurentiis and Gaumont Films. Huge shout-outs to NBC. They've done a phenomenal thing with this show. They actually created their own Tumblr for it. And
oh, really?
Yeah. What they'll do for the Tumblr is if in the episode, for any individuals who suffer traumatic experiences who may watch it, they'll post trigger warnings. So the individual suffering from this, you may want to be aware of something like this coming up later, that sort of thing. They'll warn people in advance, which I think is a pretty neat idea.
It is a neat idea. Well, you know, broadcast television has had to make some serious moves that were outside of character to keep up with all the specialty channels, especially with the advent of a lot of these award-winning shows. Less about the award-winning, more about the attention-grabbing. You know, stations like FX, HBO, they're coming out with programming that garners a lot of attention. I'm not going to say for all the wrong reasons, but for different reasons. Like Breaking Bad, Dexter, you know, they're all the kinds of shows you couldn't put on broadcast television. And now, you know, you get shows like Hannibal and you know, even shows with a little more sex than was acceptable back in the day for broadcast television. And let's be honest, there are advantages, at least when, you know, the, using foul language, appearing to be more mature, showing a little more skin, subject matter that is not suitable for families. It gives you a bit of an edge on creating programming that's interesting when you consider broadcast television couldn't touch that stuff.
And I think that's one of the other things with the specialty channels is they get away with a lot more. You know, when it comes to they don't seem as restricted, I think, by language in particular and by content. I don't think if it weren't for channels like HBO and Showtime and others like that, programs like Dexter and Sons of Anarchy and Hell on Wheels and Falling
American
Skies
Horror Story
would never see the light of day. Never. Oh, by the way, Saskatchewan just put a touchdown up on the board. It's now 26-17, 6 minutes left in the third. I don't know if you're tracking that.
I am on a very loose basis. When Saskatchewan comes to within three, then we'll start talking. Because that's going to happen. That's going to happen.
I think what a lot of people aren't realizing is the fact that the face of network television has changed.
It's had to, Aaron.
The popularity of overseas series now. For example, there's a comedy series called The Thick of It from the UK, which is about a fictional office of the Prime Minister of the UK. That's got huge traction here. It's very big. Doctor Who. The other interesting thing is Sherlock. I don't know if you've caught any of it, Frank, but that's actually not shot in the traditional series sense. Most American television series will get 13 episodes or 22 or 23 episode seasons. Sherlock is actually shot as technically speaking, a 6-episode series, but in reality, it's 3 TV movies.
Oh, okay.
So they're in there. They're filming their third season now, but the first season was 3 2-hour episodes. The second series was, 3 2-hour episodes. But that's basically how they do it in the UK. And I personally think it's a better way.
Aaron, that's an old format that the Americans have given up on.
Well, the miniseries.
That's roots. I'm trying to think of all. What was the one about the priest?
Dove.
Yeah, the one about the priest. Before Your Time.
Which one?
The one about the priest. It was a book. Yeah, I forget the name of the show. They did a second, the one about the priest. Oh my goodness! But it doesn't matter. Yeah, there are a lot. Chamberlain.
Robert Chamberlain. Okay, that sounds familiar.
Dr. Kildare.
Yes. No, my grandmother used to like to watch that one.
He was the priest. Thanks a lot. So did I.
Richard Chamberlain. There we go.
Richard Chamberlain. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. If I recall correctly, that actually got 5 seasons.
Yep.
But the
show I'm talking about is one where he was a priest. It was a miniseries. One of the miniseries that made minute. Yeah, that's it. Thornbirds.
Ah. Actually, my mom used to like to watch that.
Okay, at least I'm getting younger as we speak.
Yeah, they made the follow up in 1996, I believe. The yep. Missing years, quote unquote.
Yeah, a lot like, a prequel, one of the original prequels. Yeah, that's a good deed. Reality television is getting a kick in the teeth. I watch Big Brother. I get a kick out of watching Big Brother.
Have you seen this most recent series?
A Big Brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching it. I haven't seen... I didn't see yesterday's episode, and I didn't see all of Wednesday's episode.
Because I think there were 2 or 3 people that were fired because of racist comments they made during the show tapings.
Yes, it has been an interesting season in that regard. racist comments, you know, behavior that ignited their firings. And when these people come out of the room, they're gonna out of the house, they're gonna go, what? We're what?
What do you mean I gotta find a job?
What do you mean I'm a racist? You can't use the N-word anymore? You can't use the N-word? I mean, she did everything except use the N-word. Yeah, but you know what? Sensitivity, being what it is today, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, it strikes reality television as well. And finally, one of the greatest burials of all time in my mind, finally, American Idol is going to disappear.
Oh, is it ending?
Oh, I hated that show. Yeah, it should be.
Stop!
From what I understand, I hated that show.
Of all the American Idol winners, who's the only one that is still actually making music?
Well, it's what's her name?
Clarkson, I think, is the only one.
Yeah,
right?
Kelly Clarkson. Yeah, but it's not about that. It's not about that. I just, you know, I don't like shows. And I used to watch. America's Got Talent, and you know I love the talent. I love it's much like Ed Sullivan, you know, going back in the day where you have all the different kind of entertainment that you normally wouldn't see on television, circus acts, you know ventriloquists, family groups that sing like the Jacksons. It's all like Ed Sullivan, right? Which I thought was really great, but I really don't like the way they humiliate some people, and I find that distasteful. And
yeah,
one dose of that kind of distasteful television, and it turns me off the program. You know, and I get the humor. Like, unfortunately, like everybody else, if there's an accident on the highway, I look. I just don't look as long as most other people do. You know what I mean? And I'll only put up with it for a certain, because I think degrading and insulting people, I think that there's no place for that in television. There's no place for that in the world, you know, other than, you know, degrading and insulting coaches of the Maple Leafs. That, you know, other than that.
That's easy. That's like shooting fish, to be honest.
Or a team, right? Shooting fish in a barrel. I don't even do that. And I don't even believe in that either. You know, there are some people in this world who need some dressing down, but you know what? Ordinary people who go in the who participate in something that they think is going to get them a good experience. It's an experience they want to have because they believe it'll be a good one, and then to have the kind of stuff that does happen and the insults that are heaped on them, I find it very insulting. I truly do.
I'm absolutely, every time I turn on the television and I see the proliferation of these reality shows, I keep thinking to myself, you know what, Americans and Canadians too must absolutely thrive on mediocrity.
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's crap. It's absolutely horrible. You know, I mean, look at the career, quote unquote, of William Hung after his appearance on American Idol. It's just, this is a guy that got voted all the way through to the semifinals because he was horrible, and people thought it would be funny.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I wonder if he even realizes they were laughing at him, or he doesn't care.
I think he's thinking, you know what? I'm getting a check. I don't care.
And in that sense, that's cool. He's getting something out of it. So, you know, I don't feel so bad about that. And you're right. I didn't go looking for him, but you know, he was avoidable for me, in most terms.
I'll be honest. Still, there is a certain type of reality TV that I do watch, Frank, and I'll be honest.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And during the winter, it starts at 7 o'clock on the CBC every Saturday.
Oh.
That's the extent of the reality TV that I watch.
Which show is that? Is that the one where
would be Hawk Night in Canada.
Oh.
That is
yes.
The true reality TV.
Yeah, but sports is reality TV.
Yeah, and that's the only type of reality TV I will watch.
Oh, okay. Well, I got a weakness for Big Brother.
Well, you know, hey, everybody has their kryptonite. That's
my kryptonite. I get a kick out of the simple frankness of the show, which is I'm here. Like they have Christians on, people who claim to be honest and reputable people, and they're the best liars. You know, and I find it humorous. I really do.
I call it
and
the
veneer
of humility.
Exactly. I find it humorous because they know they're not fooling anybody, especially when they come out of the house. They had a bodybuilding religious dude that just got kicked out of the house, and he said, "I felt really bad when I lied at first. I felt I should undo that terrible thing, and I decided to, you know, to change my path." And I find that interesting because that's more or less a statement about humans and about the human experience. And, you know, to what extent will you go to winning, you know, to become a winner, you know, and that, you know, that to me, I find that interesting because it really is a mind game. That show is all about a mind game. And I have to admit also, there's some real morons that I love laughing at, but that's another story.
It's the window lickers on the show that people really tune in for. You got to admit.
Yeah, there's a few window lickers every year on that show. People who stick their tongue on metal.
I apologize for lumping all the window linkers into the same category. That understand that there's the reality TV window licker, and then there are the real life window lickers.
Yeah, and the nice thing is I get to try and figure out which ones are putting it up or which ones are really like that. You know, like in the funny thing that I like in Big Brother right now, they have this amorous adventure between this expensive real estate lady and a guy who's a pizza delivery man. But sometimes she's hoping that he really isn't a pizza delivery guy and that he's some sort of software, you know, mega millionaire, right? Meanwhile, he really does deliver pizza.
Do you hear the guitars in the background, Frank?
I hear banjos. I don't hear guitar.
So it's debutante and the pizza delivery guy. Cut the bottom of the box.
But he really isn't a pizza delivery man. And he shows up in his car with no rims and, you know, no fenders. And the light on the top. And the light on the top with dominoes. Picking her up for a date. And they're going to his pizza joint because that's the only place he can afford to buy dinner because he has coupons. I'm making this all up. Yeah, that's the only reality show I enjoy. And like you, I love sports and hockey, of course, is the greatest game on earth. It's not as much fun to watch as football is if you're a Toronto fan. It appears it might become something a little more fun, you know, because unfortunately I have this problem. When I go to a game, I root for the home team, and I happen to live in Toronto, so that happens to be the team I root for, not because of any reason other than it's the home team and I love the city.
It's your duty.
It kind of. It isn't really that, but, you know, I mean, you know, in the olden days, I'm old enough that, you know, nowadays, you can be a fan of any team, and you'll get to see a lot of their games in a season. Back in the day, if you weren't a Leaf fan, the only time you saw your team play was when they played the Leafs.
And good luck getting a ticket.
Yeah, but I mean on television too. You know,
yeah, that's
Aaron,
true.
You know what I mean? Like there were not 19 games a week on television. There were two. There was the Leafs Saturday night game and the Leafs, you know, Wednesday game midweek. That's all we got, baby. So if you like the Sabres, and then, of course, if you're a Sabre fan, the Sabres were on TV, and you could catch the Sabres. But you couldn't see a Ranger game on a regular basis. You could not see a Philadelphia game on a regular basis. You could see Montreal on a semi-regular basis because of Hockey Night in Canada. Right? Yeah. And because of Hockey Night in Canada. And back in the day then, you used to be able to watch the Montreal games on Peterborough, Channel 12, Peterborough.
That's
while,
right.
You know, so, you know, it's much easier to root for a team that you see on a regular basis, Aaron. So, you know, and since I'm going to be 60 next year, and my history includes the olden days of the Leafs when they actually won cups, it made it a lot easier to be a Toronto fan.
It's a lot easier to root for a winner, isn't it?
Well, of course it is. And, well, you know, I feel it is incumbent upon myself to not be a fan of a loser.
Well, it's a good thing there's 40 games on a week.
Well, that's just
it,
right?
You can always find another team to root for.
Oh, that's the difference today, my friend. That's, you know, you can see.
Yeah.
And if you got a some spare change in your wallet, well, not change, spare bucks in your wallet, you can follow any team in the National Hockey League and watch every game played on the, you know, every night. So
I don't think I could watch 20 games a night. I think I'd get into hockey overload.
Well, I happen to think that those packages are sold to people who are, if, for example, a Penguins fan. You know what I mean? Like somebody that is following another team that isn't Toronto or Montreal or Ottawa.
Yeah,
and,
not
watching. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, they're not watching every hockey game, but there are teams they want to see, and that's why they buy the package. Now, if they are watching all of them, good for them.
Oh, most definitely. I just think I'd probably end up going blind if I tried to watch that many hockey games.
Yeah, my limit is two or three a week.
Yeah, there's only so much suck I can put up with, and catching, you know, 82 games of the Leafs being horrible is just too much. I mean, I love them, don't get me wrong. They're my hometown team. They pretty much always will be, but there's only so much suck I can take.
Yeah, but you know what? That's what makes that's what makes watching the CFL so great. There are only eight teams, so you know, or nine, you know, that's only four games a week. So you can watch the whole, you can watch every game played with a little more easy, you know, access and time not being as big a factor.
Now, do we want to give Jessica another call?
Yes, we're going to do that right now.
Okay, perfect.
Let's give her a call and see if she's done winding down from her eventful evening.
Either that or she's three sheets to the wind already.
Nah. She sounds like she's a career girl.
Hello?
Hey, Jessica.
Hey. Sorry about that.
Oh, please don't apologize. I'm very glad that you have the time. I'm very glad that you have the time to talk to us. You have a very interesting story to tell. First of all, congratulations to Alberta on winning their first volleyball championship. They won it today.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. I thought you might want to know that. Okay, so, you know, I've hooked up with Kent. Kent and I have become, you know, not great friends, but we've become great acquaintances, and we've enjoyed, you know, sharing the subject of football. And then the subject came up that his better half, mother of his children, has been working diligently on a career in country music. Now, I've had a chance to listen to your music. I'm very pleased to say, honestly, you are really good.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. So, back in the day while you were in Alberta, how young were you? I know you went to acting school, and I assume that was before you really got into bluegrass. And that seems to be what you refer to your music label as, bluegrass.
It's country, bluegrass, with a few pop influences, but really I'm a country girl at heart, so it's country music.
Okay, so how old were you when you decided you wanted to be a singer?
Well, I had kind of always wanted to be a singer, but I really thought it was kind of an unrealistic dream, so I ended up getting married at a very young age, which was my other main dream in life, and I was 21 and had two kids by the time the singing dream even became a remote possibility, because I just sang in church every weekend. And it wasn't until somebody came and heard me sing and they said, you know what, you should do this for a living. And so that's when we really started considering it, and that's when it all happened.
Yeah, and a couple of years ago, you made the big move to Nashville.
Yes.
Obviously, you know, the holy grail of country music exists there.
Absolutely.
What is the big difference of being, to help us understand, what would motivate an Alberta girl, small town Alberta girl, mother of two children, 21 years old, decide to make the move to Nashville?
Okay, well, that's a great question. And we didn't actually move until just a couple years ago, and we have four kids now. And so we've got the whole family packed them up and moved. And basically, I would say two reasons. The market in Canada is a tenth the size of the market down here, and I just feel like there's a better shot of really making a living in the business down here. And then also, there's a saying that people say, you know, you have to be present to win. And really, if you're not around in people's faces, they forget about you. And so if you really want to make those connections, you have to be in this town. So that's the main reason.
Right. And obviously as well, there has to be a support group available to you there to help enhance your career.
Yes, exactly. Yes, very much so.
What kind of people are there that make or break your opportunity to have a career in country music?
Well, I have an amazing manager, and then I have a lot of people that I co-write with and that we get together on a regular basis and, you know, just kind of collaborate and, you know, put our minds together.
Your lyrics are very interesting. You're very my life. You're a my life writer. This is what
I think that's an accurate statement.
You like to share your experience with people. How do you find people reacting to it, and how does it help you in because if you're willing to talk about yourself, it's quite clear you're willing to listen to what people think as well. What kind of feedback do you get on your songs, and do people get that it's a personal experience for you?
That's a great question. Yeah, a lot of the songs are definitely a personal experience, and I love the chance to touch a life with my songs, potentially. I've had a military woman listen to one of my songs and just feel like it was something she could finish her day out in the field and just come back and to her tent and listen to it and feel like it was something that spoke to her, and that means the world to me. And, you know, my songs range all the way from something that might be deep and personal to just something really fun that people can listen to, and it just might brighten their day. It may not be something that has a deep meaning, but you're right. I love to sing about life, and that's what I love about country music, too, is that it's so much about life.
I don't hear much about your dog, your refrigerator on your deck, lyrics. You're not really into that kind of stuff.
No.
You do love wearing boots, jeans,
yes,
and a plaid shirt. I know that you love that look. I like it too. I mean, on me, not just on you, but I like it on me too. I love plaid shirts too, and my cowboy boots, which don't fit into the community that I'm in, but I can't help but wear them. There's something about putting on cowboy boots that makes me feel like a few feet taller. I don't know why.
I can see that. I'm really, my style is redneck hippie. So I love the jeans and the boots and the headbands and all that stuff.
So you could stand on both sides of a protest.
Yeah, exactly. That's part of my job too, is remaining very neutral, because I can have strong beliefs, and this doesn't mean I have to go blabbing them everywhere. I like to be friends with everybody.
There you go. So you don't want to do like those three girls did, go to England and start complaining about
yes,
the war,
exactly.
and end up not being on the radio anymore.
Pretty much excommunicated. That's right. It wasn't a smart move, but
A perfect example of what you just said, and that you should stay away from. I'd like to introduce you to Aaron William Freeland. He's my partner on the show. On Fridays.
Hey, Jessica, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Excellent. So it was a good gig at Rippey's then, eh?
Yes, it was. Just got finished. It is a hot night here in Nashville, and we were outside on the rooftop, and so we're all just drenched. It's a good time.
So you've got a bit of a hiatus now until October when you're playing at the showcase.
Yes. I mean, hiatus is, we should use that term loosely, because I'm still singing every weekend and stuff downtown, but no major gigs until October.
Ah, okay. So you'll still be doing the regular, you know, for lack of a better term, the beer joint gigs.
Yes, exactly.
Doing the bigger shows.
Yep.
Excellent.
Jessica, where are you going, and where will you be, in case somebody who's listening might want to catch up to you?
Well, the interesting part about that is that my job downtown is I don't want to say unorganized, but we all just kind of find out the evening of when we're singing down there, so I don't even know where I'll be or when, but the best thing I can tell you is to watch my Facebook fan page, just Jessica Ridley, and I always tell everybody as soon as I know where I'm going to be, I post it and I put the time up there, so 2 or 3 nights a week, you can always catch me downtown Nashville.
And that's the reason why we planned to have you as a guest, and we didn't start the show with you right away. And for the people that were listening, Jessica wasn't being rude. She just explained. Now you all understand why it happened the way it did, and why
yes,
I was impatient.
I do apologize.
don't apologize. I knew this was the case prior to, and what's important is that you're a Canadian girl seeking almost the American dream. What's that like being Canadian in Nashville?
You know what? Their cultures are pretty similar from Calgary to Nashville. They're both cities full of a ton of friendly people, and they're very down-to-earth. And there's, of course, a couple unique little subtleties that are, you know, we get made fun of once in a while for how we talk. And then especially Kent. Me a little less so, because I spent a lot more time in the United States growing up, so I don't really have the accent, but it's really close. It's not a lot different, and plus the weather is so much better down here.
Yeah, not as much rain.
Uh-uh, not as much rain and not as much snow and not as much cold.
This year, there's no amount of snow that a Calgarian wouldn't mind. The rain is something that really kicked them in the behind.
I've heard. That's crazy.
Isn't that horrible?
Funny. My heart just goes out to those people.
Yep. But Calgary people are really tough. Almost like some of
the
meat they
sell. Yeah, I was proud. Yeah, I was very proud to call that my hometown when I saw how they got together and cleaned up that mess.
Yeah, they did a great job, didn't they?
Yeah.
Now, as a country singer, you know, we've had a lot of success in Canada. Or Canadians, you know, Shania Twain primarily, one of the biggest country music stars of all time. And when she broke through, she had talent. First of all, talent is not all a person needs to get by. She had her gimmick. She had her belly button exposed. What's your tag?
You know what, besides the singing, and you're so right, it's really about a package thing. It's not just, you know, oh, you've got a great set of pipes. I think my uniqueness is that I'm a communicator, and I really just love getting to know people, even if it's from a stage. I mean, it's tougher because there's not a two-way conversation going on, but I love feeling like there's something going back and forth, like you're communicating a message from the stage. And that's what I love to do. I love doing radio interviews like this and going, like, live into little places and stations and playing a song or two. So that's my favorite part, is just getting inside, like, back and forth in people's heads and, you know, maybe brightening their day that way.
Well, you know what really brightened my day? You probably have a great voice coach. You said as far as how you like to present yourself. You've got a great coach there. But one of your coaches, really, you should fire him or her and get a new one, is your basketball coach that you used for Flamingo Red. I have to tell you, young lady, that was one of the most horrible. That was your – that of everything that I've seen of you, that was not the best.
Oh, my basketball shot?
Yes.
Hey, I thought I even got the wrist flick in there.
I got my tongue in my cheek when I say that. I'm just having fun with you. It was kind of funny that out of nowhere comes this basketball pitch, and I'm going, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah, okay. She's into sports. I like her already.
I am into sports very much so. In fact, I missed my Cowboys. My Cowboys are playing tonight, I think.
Yeah, Kent told me you're a big Cowboys fan.
I was
a Cowboys fan only because they had the Cowboy cheerleaders.
I know a lot of people
I go back to the 70s, okay? So, you know, I'm old enough to be your father, so or maybe even grandfather.
I was just going to say, my dad and I, that's where we bonded, and that's pretty much the reason he likes the Cowboys, too, so... Don't worry, I understand.
Good, I'm glad. You know, I'm as Canadian as American apple pie. Now,
that's
you,
awesome.
on your homepage, you have a homepage, and folks, if you look for it, it's Jessica Ridley. Now there are a few Jessica Ridleys, but she'll be the one that's the country singer, and also. When you go onto her homepage, you can listen to her music. That's a pretty interesting. I'll call it a idea, gamble or whatever, allowing people to listen to your music for free.
Yes, I'm a big believer in giving things away, and I think it's like karma. You know, it all comes back to you. So if I'm real generous with my music, then one day that's going to pay off. And I really do love letting people just get to know my music and me without having to spend a fortune. So I know what it's like to not have a fortune to spend.
Exactly. No, I really am. I'm humbled by yours and Kent's approach to life. I'm a karma person too, as well. A lot of things that, you know, if you really believe in karma, you know, it's just another way of saying JC without saying JC. So, you know, it's just another way of saying that we believe that good enhances your life because
That's
you don't
right,
have a
exactly.
negative thing. You don't have a negative driving you. And I'm a firm
That's
believer
right.
that if I resist the temptation of doing things that are not right, I will be rewarded. I truly believe that. And
yep,
people
I
so who
agree with you.
And people who do harm on me assist me in getting good karma. So those are the things that I believe in. And I can tell from your music and from your attitude and your giddy voice that you're a pretty open person, like you said. You do come across like a person who likes to give, knowing that when it's time you'll receive because of it.
Well, thanks for saying that. I appreciate it.
And you know, Kent's a wonderful guy. He knows how I feel about him. I love talking
he
to him on a regular
sure
basis. And
He's
you're very
super
lucky.
Dad.
Yeah, he sure is. And it's pretty good when nowadays more and more men are willing to give up for the dreams of their wives, and I applaud them for that.
Mm-hmm.
As much as
he is so giving and supportive, I couldn't even imagine being married to anybody else. And you know what the coolest part with that, you want to talk karma, is that he, being down in Tennessee, has actually helped his business, his sports scouting business, so much. Like Ridley Scouting is benefiting like crazy from us being down here, and I'm so excited for him as well. It's actually kind of helped both of our careers, so I think he had that coming.
No, it's true. And anybody out there who doesn't believe what I'm saying, give it a try. Resist
yep,
the temptation
exactly.
to you know, and hey, listen, nobody's perfect, right? I mean, we all have setbacks. We all do things that we wish we hadn't have done. But I think
Absolutely.
the most important thing that we can learn is that once we make a mistake, we learn from it and try to move
yep.
forward. Now,
exactly.
You're a career right now, you know, you have time for me right now, and I appreciate it. Where do you see yourself in, let's say, 2 years?
In 2 years, I would love to be a lot busier with live dates. because that is my favorite thing to do, and not only do I love it, but it's really where the money is at. And so I would love to see another, like my newer EP finished and under my belt, and to be touring, supporting that, and potentially, you know, be on a label or at least opening for some bigger names. And so I think that's my kind of 2-year plan. And I should mention, too, for anybody who's listening, we are trying right now to get back in the studio and record a new EP with 6 songs on it. And we are running an Indiegogo and a Kickstarter campaign to raise that money. So it's really easy to get involved. And all of that information is on every single one of my online presences, whether it's Facebook or Twitter or JessicaRidley.com. So that's my little pitch for myself.
And we'll let you do that pitch again as we move along. Do you mind if we play one of your songs? I already played your highway song, the highway song, and I really liked it. And I really, you know, you're not a bad balladeer either.
Thanks.
Yeah, you do some really nice ballads. So again, if you get a chance, you can tune in to her music by just going to JessicaRidley.com, and her songs are right there. And you will be, I promise you, pleasantly surprised, as I was. Here's Jessica Ridley doing Hit and Run. It's not a baseball song, but, you know, it's not a crime song either. We'll be back after this song.
Don't make
Now, that song has a little Shania Twain twang to it.
You think so? I love
yeah.
her, so that's a, I love hearing that.
No, it does. It has a little bit of that Shania Twain twang. And,
cool.
Yeah, very cool. You really do have an energy level that really does come out in your music. How hard is it to be so energetic, you know, because people who don't have an involvement in the media, whether it's music, acting, radio, television, whatever it is, you have to, for a short time, really be up. How do you do that? You know, how do you get that excitement level? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not easy.
Yeah, totally, no. No, you know what? Again, I'm good with the two-part answers here, I guess. I would say, firstly, I think if you're doing what you're meant to do, it does energize you. So if you love your job, even if you don't feel like going that day, usually by the time you get there and you get going, you just get energized. That's what happens to me, at least. When I get on stage, even if I don't feel like it sometimes, which is rare, but usually by the time I get up there and there's an energetic crowd, and I'm a huge believer in, like, you know, the energy of a room, because oftentimes, you know, tonight's a good example. Tonight, the people in the room were more of a let's sit and talk crowd. We're not really here to listen to the band. And it was really hard to stay excited and to stay energetic when you're not feeling that back from the audience. But almost always, that's so rare, almost always the audience is really into it. They're clapping and they're cheering and they're excited. And that kind of rubs off on you. And so, you know, there's been a handful of times where maybe due to outside circumstances, you're not having a great day and you don't feel like it. And so, but that's so rare, because it really does energize me doing what I love.
But it does help to have the feedback from the crowd.
Absolutely.
Now, when you sit down to write a song, you know, the lyrics to a song,
mm-hmm.
What is that process like? Is it something that you wake up in the middle of the night and you think of a couple of chords or three lines and you start writing, or do you have a sketch pad, a pad beside your bed?
Yes, all of the above. I have a note in my iPhone that's about a mile long, full of ideas that I just write down every single time I think of one. Because if I don't write it down right when I think of it, I forget right away. So I keep a list of ideas, and then I write lots of different ways. I love to co-write. If someone I know has a musical idea and they've got it pretty much finished, I love writing lyrics to that. And then I'll also start by, sometimes I'll just write a whole lyric with no music to it and then write the music later. So I kind of write all different ways, actually.
Well, in other words, whatever inspiration strikes you first, you start there and then work your way,
exactly,
whichever direction that takes you.
Exactly.
Now you're obviously very young. So now you're not even 30 yet. You're not even 30 yet.
Nope.
So
I'm not.
So you know, even Shania Twain, you know, even though she took another person with a good soul, I'll say, you know, mm-hmm, a person who believed in family like you do,
yep,
sacrificed for their family. You know, they weren't her children, they were her siblings, and she took care of them, and until they were okay, she held off her career. I guess that's another one,
yeah,
of those wins for karma, I guess.
That's right.
You know, you haven't had to sacrifice that much, but you do have the support of your husband. Do you feel any pressure because he supports you so much? You know how it is when you want something for yourself, and then it's a lot easier to deal with when you're only dealing with your want. But when someone supports you, there must be a little extra pressure because your husband, Kent, is so supportive.
You know what? I wouldn't say there's any pressure from him, because we're equally, like, it's really a great 50-50 thing we've got going on. And it's so cool because I'm able to kind of cheer him on. And our businesses really run parallel to each other. We're both kind of trying to make it in our respective businesses. So he and I, there's no pressure anyway there. And I wouldn't say there's actually, if any pressure I feel is self-induced, but I feel it a lot as it relates to everything outside of that, because like my family, they've sacrificed a ton in order for us to be down here, whether that's from, you know, supporting us financially when they need to, or, like, well, just letting us go. It was really hard to move away from everybody we've always lived within 5 minutes of. And so there's some really tough stuff, but it's like, you know, if you really feel like you're meant to be doing something, you've got to be willing to go for broke and just do it. So, yeah, I do feel lots of pressure, but I also have to just keep on taking it one day at a time and just trusting that it'll work out right when it's supposed to and not a minute sooner.
Yeah, I'm proud of you as from one new human being to another human being, that really you're not leaving any, you're not leaving much, you're not going to be one of those people that has any regrets. I mean, four children,
right.
You got the family thing down, right? A pretty good husband, you got that down. You know, you're an Alberta, you're a young Albertan who had a dream. That maybe the dream wouldn't be found in Alberta, made the move to Nashville. I mean, it's pretty a pretty interesting life you've made for yourself at such a young and tender age.
Well, thank you. I definitely am a risk taker. I always bug Kent and say, man, like, if you'd have known what you were getting into when you married me, because our life has gotten a lot more exciting in the past few years than I think we bargained for, but... Yeah, you know, I wouldn't change it. I wouldn't have it any other way. And I love the fact that, like you said, I won't have regrets. I mean, at least I'll know one way or another. I'll never be wondering what if, you know?
How proud are you?
I'd rather fail than wonder that.
Yeah, well, you'd rather fail and know that you tried.
Exactly.
And that's the important thing. Yeah, I really admire your attitude. It's really a nice attitude. It's refreshing, really. how proud were you the first time you heard, what song was it that you heard on the radio that somebody played, you know, on their own volition, a radio station, that moment? Tell us about that moment.
That was such a cool moment, actually. I was down here in Nashville on a writing trip, and I was in a car with a number of people, and one of them was my manager, who he and I just have been in this funk together from the start. And so it was really a cool moment for us to all be together. And we were downtown Nashville on Broadway, of all places. And all of a sudden, on came my first single, Flaming Red. And it just was like, whoa, this is amazing. And we cranked it up and drove around in circles to not get out of the car yet. And just, it was amazing. It was like a little party in the car. It was great.
Yeah, you must really, So now your music's played. How much more did that motivate you to write lyrics and music?
Oh, hugely, yeah. That's a big inspiration for sure, because then it's like your audience is even bigger. So it's then you've got even more people that might be listening to you. And so, yeah, it's definitely inspiring.
Okay, we've only got about 8 minutes left. And in these final few minutes, I would really like to talk from the perspective of the Alberta girl and what you would suggest to a young, hopeful singer. Step one, what would that be?
I would say kind of outline what exactly it is that you want to achieve. If you really love singing in the bars, and I mean, I am certainly not knocking it. I do it every weekend, and I do love it. And some people, I have great friends who that's really their dream, is to sing in the bars and in the clubs, and they just love it. It's their dream. And so I would say, decide what it is exactly that your end goal with it all is. And if your end goal is that, then do things that, you know, I always say start how you want to finish. So if that's your goal and your dream, then you have to start doing little things that will enable you to be in those places. If your dream is to, you know, be on the radio and be the next Carrie Underwood, it's obviously going to be a lot different of a plan and a you know, plan of attack. And it's extremely expensive, and like you know, we were just talking about it, it's a huge risk, and it's, the odds are so against you. Like, it's like one in a million that, you know, I'll actually succeed to the point of, you know, gaining some massive notoriety and you know, making a living doing this and all that stuff. So I would say just be sure. Be absolutely 100,000,000% sure that it's what you want to do before you take a giant leap like that.
Yeah, you know, if I can, you know, if I can put it in my terms, it's preparation and hard work being prepared for
absolutely
an opportunity.
Yep, and almost nothing can prepare you. Like, I wouldn't say I was prepared. I've gotten a major crash course since, you know, starting in this, and I've learned a ton, and I don't know if I could have been any more ready than I was.
Yeah, you know, when you talk about singing in bars and stuff like that, that is a good thing. It's all about a constant rehearsal for that big moment. We talked about Shania Twain earlier, and she spent time up north singing in shows as just one voice of many. But it is that constant practice and hard work sounds almost like a sports story. You know,
yeah,
practice,
totally.
Practice,
there's a
practice,
lot of
practice. Yeah, what are some of the parallels? Flesh them out for us.
Well, like you just said, starting with practice, that's a huge, huge thing. I mean, there's nothing that can prepare you for getting into the ring like that other than experience. So I say practice, but then practicing is different than actually being in the game. So, you know, you can stand there and throw, you know, pitches or, you know, your quarterback.
Or footballs.
And practice. Exactly. Like, you can throw your footballs as many times as you want, but there's a whole new element that comes into play when you're actually in the real thing, in the real game, in front of all kinds of people. That is it's something that can only be learned by doing it. So that's definitely a parallel there. And so just experience is another thing. And then, you know, the pressure of it too. So you've got to deal with the people that are watching you, and, you know, you mess up and a lot of people see, you know, it's not like you're at a desk job. If you make a typo, you hit undo. But if you, you know, mess up on stage, you've got to be willing to own it and to kind of let it roll off your back. Because if you look really scared and nervous, everyone else is going to feel that from you, you know?
Now, also, as a youngster, you spent a lot of time. We talked about singing in church. Want to talk about preparation? That's quite a bit right there. You know, it's amazing. It's amazing where you know, you would not think. You know, mind you, though, a lot of great black singers come out of choirs. There's not as many. I don't mean to bring race into this, but there's a reason for me saying it. I guess is that white religious singers aren't as there isn't as much notoriety for them as there are, you know, every black singer almost says, I sang in the choir. When you said it, I found it a little more surprising. Is there something wrong with me?
I've never thought about that before. I don't know. I didn't even do too much choir singing. It was more like we'd call it like our little worship team, and we'd have like a 4 or 5 person band kind of thing. And I was just one of the singers in this little band. And so I didn't get too much choir experience, but yeah,
okay.
It's an interesting point. I don't know.
Okay. So then really, I remember when I was a kid, when rock and roll started to really hit it, and then folk became very popular. Churches allowed kids to do folk, religious folk music. And that sounds more or less what you were doing, that kind of thing. More of a band, kind of worshiping, kind of preaching, but not really as heavily as a choir. You know, not pulling out music out of the scriptures or the hymn book, but more or less singing good ideas, good thoughts in church using you know, the kind of music that young people could relate to, I guess.
Okay, very cool.
Right? So,
yeah.
So now you're in Alberta, you decide to leave. we've only got a minute, but what is the reason you think somebody should take the risk? What made you take that risk? What's the one thing that gave you this career opportunity?
Well, honestly, if you've read my bio or talked a lot to Kent, I mean, one of the things that is the biggest driving force in my life is my faith. And so I would say the biggest thing that made us finally just take the plunge, pack up and move, and actually do it was the fact that we just feel like it's what we're meant to do. It's kind of like our calling. And so I just feel like I'm supposed to be here, and I'm just doing what God wants me to do.
Aaron, real quick, I've ignored you. Forgive me.
No worries, Frank. You're a lot better at interviewing than I am. I just want to see if I've got the timeline here down correct, Jessica. Now, Kent was saying that you guys actually started commuting, I guess, to Nashville for gigs and whatnot 7 or 8 years ago, but you only actually moved years ago?
Yeah, exactly. It was about let's say probably more like 5 or 6 years ago. I started coming down, and it ended up, so by the end of that 5 or 6 year period, I was coming down once a month, and that just, it got so expensive. And so it's like, why are we living up here and paying all this money for me to fly back and forth? So that was like, okay, we just need to go. And yeah, that was, almost 2 years ago.
Now, I guess the one thing that I can say about playing in bars is that you develop stage patter, you develop the ability to build a rapport with the audience. Based on my experience with different groups and music and the bar scene in and around Toronto, that's got to have been a crucial part of you getting as far as you do. I mean, your music's awesome, but if they don't like you on stage, you're not really going to go very far, right?
That's really true. And, the experience is, like, you can't put a price on that. Like I was saying, like, nothing can prepare you for that besides actually doing it. And so I'm just really thankful that I've, in the interim here, before something bigger happens, at least I've got the chance to be doing what I love, making a little money doing it, and gaining the experience I'm gaining while I'm doing it.
So would you say maybe opening the Opry for the CMAs would be entirely out of the question in, say, 5 to 10 years?
Oh, gosh, no. I think that's well within the realm of possibilities.
If you never aim high, right?
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you got to be there to live there.
That's right, yeah.
Okay, Jessica, thank you so much for taking this time to give us an idea of how well an Alberta girl can do in Nashville. We're really proud of you.
Oh, you're so welcome, and thank you.
Our pleasure. From Aaron and I, thank you for being on the program, and we're going to catch up to you again the next time you make the next big move.
All right. That sounds great. And, yeah, well, I'm sure you'll be kept posted and in the loop. And other than that, just have people swing by jessicaridley.com and get all that free music and potentially check out my Kickstarter campaign and see if they'd like to get one of the cool perks for being a part of getting that thing off the ground donation-wise.
Thank you, Jessica, and our best wishes.
Thank you. Talk to you later.
Yep, have a great day. All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So there you have it, Jessica Ridley. We're kind of lucky for her to take the time. She just got off the stage. Literally, she just got off the stage. And we thought maybe it would be a good idea to give her a chance to chill before she started talking to us. Aaron, thanks again for being a big part of Friday. And I hope you had as much fun as I did.
Most definitely, Frank. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. Oh, real quick, parting news. Lacrosse, what's going on?
We're over
now, so we might as well just, you know.
We're in the playoffs now, so everything's proceeding apace in the Major Series Lacrosse and the Senior B Leagues. The Junior A's are getting a little more into it. Some of the series are winding up. Some are, you know, it's been an interesting season in Major Series Lacrosse, let's put it that way. One of the perennial powerhouses, Brampton, didn't get as far as we figured they would. Six Nations is, of course, still in there. Peterborough and Brooklyn last night, Peterborough actually managed to squeak out a win with 3 seconds left. That was rather exciting. But as it stands, you know, things are proceeding apace. We are, as they say, we're getting down to the short strokes.
There you go. Well, Aaron, thanks a lot for being on the program, and thanks for the brief update on lacrosse.
Thank you very much, Frank.
My pleasure. Well, you're listening to Candid Frank Live, or you've listened to Candid Frank Live with Aaron William Freeland, and also both Jessica and Kent Ridley. Kent, our football scout and expert, and Jessica, our talented bluegrass country balladeer. And she writes music and lyrics as well. Very multi-talented young lady. Four children. She hasn't hit 30 yet. Four children, and she's working on a career in music. Very admirable. And a husband who backs her up 100%. And that's got to be a good thing. A great couple. All best wishes to them, too. And I'm sure you'll be hearing more about them a little later, a little further down the road. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back again on Monday with Argo Night, where I guess John Granger will be back, and we'll be talking about that game last night. Oh, God, you don't want to be a Montreal fan. And on Wednesday, we'll go back to our network thing, and we're going to be talking to a BC Lion podcaster about their chances of making it out of the West. Tonight, Calgary beats Saskatchewan. Maybe Saskatchewan isn't unbeatable after all. We'll talk all about those wonderful things next week. And again, next Friday, Aaron will be back with me, and we'll think about something to talk about then. If you have any ideas, you can either email Aaron or I, or you could message us on Facebook, or you can just give us a call and tell us what you want to talk about. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you again next time. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, Candid Frank Live, 10 to 12 a.m.
Night tonight, tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump, and the fans all go insane. Someone roars, Bobby scores at the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name, and the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Second period, where players dash with skates of flash, the home team trails behind. But they grab the puck and go bursting up, and they're down across the line. They storm the crease like bumblebees, they travel like a burning flame. We see them slide the puck inside, it's a 1-1 hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name, and the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Third period, last game in the playoffs, too. Oh, take me where the hockey players face off down the rink, and the Stanley Cup is all filled up for the champs who win the drink. Now the final flick of a hockey stick and a one gigantic scream. The puck is in, the home team wins the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name, and the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name, and the best game you can name is the good old hockey game. Oh, the good old hockey game is the best game you can name, and the best game you can name is the good old hockey game.
Jessica Ridley.
Friday night, here we go. It's our version of a late.